Welcome to Leaders Under Fire in Sports, brought to you by Culture in Sports. This is where leadership decisions, organizational culture, media pressure, and legal realities collide. Your hosts are legal expert Bob Boland, myself, crisis communication specialist Jeff Chatterton, and with leadership and culture expert Dr. Jeremy Piasecki. Together with our special guests, we break down the moments that put sports leaders under the microscope and what it really takes to respond with integrity, accountability, and impact. This is Leaders Under Fire in Sports. Welcome to Leaders Under Fire in Sports. We're a new podcast series. We're hosted by Culture in Sports. I'm Jeff Chatterton.
And I'm Bob Boland.
So, who are we? What on earth is this all about? So let me introduce you to Bob. Bob is a lawyer. Bob, you're a professor. You're an expert in the field of ethics and law when it comes to sports. You're the one who gets that phone call when a coach is accused of something nefarious, whether a coach is accused of harassment or maybe he's going to be fired with cause, without cause. You're the guy who gets that call.
If bad stuff happens in athletics, it's me, right?
Yeah. Bad news bear. You're the former athletic integrity officer at Penn State University. You were the guy that was brought in to help clean up after the Jerry Sandusky scandal. You've taught sports business everywhere. We're Ohio, NYU,
Law School and my law practice where I hang my shingle out at Shoemaker, Loop and Kendrick, as co-chair of their sports and law practice. So I am that guy. You, Jeff, are the guy I call when the crisis comes in my door. You're an internationally recognized expert on crisis communication and leadership communication. You're the guy who's helped solve the problem for the public.
Someone's got to do it, right?
Yeah. And we're guys who've done our bit, right? We're doing this little piece to help Canadian American friendship at this moment. If you've heard Jeff's accent, you know that he comes from north of the parallel, and I hail from the south. But two middle-aged white guys who specialize in crisis can get along quite well and do quite well in the world together. Really here, Jeff, because it's your idea, right? The idea that you wrote a book called Leaders Under Fire. And that's the name of this podcast. That's our theme, Leaders Under Fire. And the other thought I have from my experience, having the strangest job in the world as athletic integrity officer at Penn State, dealing with the biggest college scandal in history, dealing with crises large and small ever since, is that everybody is going to someday be under investigation, reviewed, looked at. Now, I specialize in sports, but former prosecutor, look at things in all across the world. And what's the real purpose of this? It's that there are some techniques that we're going to share with our audience who can make it better. This is our goal. We're going to look at the places where people trip up, the people fall down, and the people can avoid some of these problems, a lot of them self-inflicted. Right, Jeff?
Well, that's it. So many of these problems are self-inflicted. Sometimes bad things happen to really good people, and we're just trying to make it better. That's really what that's all about. Who's the show for? I mean, we talk about leaders under fire in sports. Obviously, if you are a head coach somewhere, whether it's for your kids' local tech, rec league soccer or hockey or little league team, all the way up to, head coach at LSU, chances are good you're going to pick something up. Athletic directors. Whether it's at the NCAA level, sports executives in large, national sports organizations, the commissioner in charge of the, help me out here, the local Pop Warner League, all of those people.
It's true, Jeff. It's at every level that in particularly if we're in sports, we're talking about the scrutiny leaders are under. The decisions that they have to make to protect and take care of the people that they're in charge of, to protect the good of the game and the good of the sports they play, and where they fall short, and oftentimes where they end up falling short in being responsive to the inquiry or the complaints on the backside of it. So that's really the work we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about leaders in sports in crisis, under fire, and how they can respond better. So that's our goal here. Yeah, I think if you think about it, if you want to go from the top end to the bottom, FIFA and the Olympic Committee at the highest level, they've obviously had criminal scandals.
Oh my God!
Every type of scandal.
You could do an entire season on FIFA alone.
FIFA is the gift that keeps on giving. I mean, we may not be able to finish that season. So we'll be talking about them. We can certainly talk about the Olympics. We can talk about the national sports organizations on your side of the border and the national governing bodies on mine. All of them have had some version of a Sandusky crisis, whether it's gymnastics and the Athlete A and the NASCAR crisis, or other crises in other sports like swimming in Canada, hockey, bobsled, a number of them. We've worked together north of the border on rugby in Canada.
We've
worked on some other issues in making situations better. Here in the States, obviously, if you think about it, Penn State was the first of the big crises. And I won't even assess it in human terms. I'll assess it a little bit more in just financial ones, recognizing there were human costs involved. But it was a $500 million crisis by the time all was said and done. And Penn State, at least in response, did virtually everything right. They opened themselves up. They went through the process. They hired people like me to kind of maintain the culture, to report. They engaged in as much transparency as they could bear. And I think recovered quicker than most, and certainly than people expected as a result of that. But that's one of the challenges. We don't usually embrace that kind of transparency, that openness. And we often respond by and that'll be really the next episode we begin to talk about, a phrase of mine: don't kick the milk under the refrigerator.
Let's walk through some of the topics that we were hoping to take a look at and explore over the next few weeks. I like that. Don't kick the milk under the refrigerator. What do you mean?
Well, every guy does this. I don't know if we're speaking to any women in the audience here, but I don't know a single man that doesn't drink milk out of the refrigerator from the carton.
Well, I'm Canadian. We drink milk in bags.
Yeah, there you go. But you know, and it's always direct from the container, not into a glass, and invariably some spills. And if you're a guy, what do you do with it? You
kick
that spilled milk right under the refrigerator.
Yeah.
Until, you know, milk's a living organism. It grows. It metastasizes. It grows into something so large that it throws the refrigerator back on you one day, that you didn't think about what you were doing and how much you were kicking under. It was too convenient. So to some degree, I think that's a conversation about how to avoid crises of our own making by actually trying to do the right thing and clean it up quickly so that it doesn't do whatever milk does when it's under a refrigerator for 6 or 7 years.
I like that. You could have a whole conversation about the difference between doing something quickly and doing something thoroughly, and with the various merits of each. There is no substitute for speed, but at the same time, you got to make sure you're actually doing the work. Right.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly right on that one. And I think that's one of the most complex things. If we think about how scandals begin, how crises begin to engulf leaders, ultimately, it's often because we're trying to cover up something that might have been as innocuous as milk in the beginning, something that wasn't a problem in the process. But by the time it is there, and everybody's drunk milk from that container and kicked it under the refrigerator, that's going to be a real problem.
Well,
and
now you're explaining to the world why you have a small Vietnamese family living underneath your fridge. You know, who knows what kind of organisms or everything are underneath there? Yeah,
that's right. And it is something that we do in expedience. Again, process, opportunity, just real leadership in those moments to own mistakes, to vow to make them better, and to get underneath that refrigerator with a mop and some cleaning fluid every now and then is probably enough to help a lot of those. That's kind of our first one. The second one also comes from my background. And it's a phrase I use is that, and this is what's engulfing a lot of leaders today. It's missing the unblocked blitzer. Now, obviously I'm an old football player, an old offensive lineman, and I've been around football, and there's a saw that they use in the NFL that it's not one of the linemen that you account for that sacks the quarterback. It's the unaccounted for blitz, the guy who runs free at you. So a lot like political consultants, a lot like most leaders, we're prepared for what's in front of us. What we're not prepared to do is look over the horizon, have some sense of what's coming at us from down and over the hill. And how do we prepare, and how do we harden our defenses, not just for black swans, but for things that are anticipated, just anticipated with a twist. So often the thing that causes our downfall isn't the thing we planned for, isn't the crisis in front of us. It's the crisis that came on us quickly and that we didn't understand, and didn't understand the seriousness of our response, and moreover, how to protect ourselves in those moments.
You know the story of Black Swan and why on earth Black Swan is even an expression?
I don't. Share that one with us.
So it used to be, my understanding, and feel free to quote me, you know, do the research, is it was a turn of phrase used by people because it could never exist. Like, what am I having for dinner? Oh, my wife is cooking me up a black swan, right? Like, as in, no, I'm on my own, right? Like, there was no such thing as a black swan, which was fine until explorers in Australia discovered
black swan.
Black swan, and went, well, crap, there goes that whole thing. Black swans do exist, and it just somehow became the don't factor in the, you know, the black swans will come out from you from nowhere, and just when you're not expecting them, or because it's Australia where every living creature wants to kill you. Yeah,
there's always that. We've lost our Australian listeners already, so this is pretty good. We're happy to if you'll hang on, we'll probably get around to to bringing you back into our good graces. We hope
we are nothing if not unfiltered and dressed.
That's right. So you are going to get some unfiltered stuff from old hands, and I think that's one of the other factors. Maybe not too old hands. Jeff, you I think kind of gave us number three, and it's how to recover from a crisis.
Okay, so the black swan hits you. The unblocked blitzer smacks you in the mouth. You know, what do you do? What on earth do you do? Everyone has the conversation about preventing crises. What do you do when you've actually been stuck in the crap? So there's some good ideas. There's some really bad ideas that I see time and time again. I'm just going to spend some time go through and indicate, yeah, this is a really good idea. And whatever you do, you're going to be really tempted to do this. Don't do it. And here's why. So we'll have some fun with that. My favorite, I think, potential topic. We both have like 3x5 cards just sitting off camera, sitting here with like, hey, let's talk about this. Let's talk about this. But the one I'm looking forward to is, what do you do when your lawyers kick you in the face? When your lawyers are actually a problem, right? You know, that never happens, right, Bob?
I resemble that remark. Moreover, I think there are a lot of situations where the advice that lawyers give, the typical advice that lawyers give, often causes you more harm in the recovery, in the amelioration, the getting better part of a crisis.
Ooh, amelioration.
So the idea that if you hide behind counsel, If you look there, it's not a protected place. Their advice is often and good advice, but often the kind that's tried and true to protect against one outcome leads you into another. There's an old story about the country lawyer who kept a big mouth bass on his wall with the plaque underneath that said if he kept his mouth shut, he wouldn't have gotten caught either. as an admonition to your plaint to plaintiffs, so or to defendants in the process, so his clients could read that. But silence isn't the only answer, and particularly if criminal sanctions or civil sanctions aren't the worst of your outcomes. Loss of business, loss of your job, loss of trust all show up. So a lot of times you have to be able to filter your lawyer's advice from the lens in which they're giving it and understand that you may have bigger issues there. And Jeff, that's exactly what I turn to you for. It's pretty easy for me to say to a client, go to ground. It's a lot harder for you to tell me how I get them out of the ground, give the responses they need, and maybe take back some of the narrative.
I have seen it time and time and time again, where lawyers who, sorry as I smack my mic, lawyers who are maybe, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, thinking of the best interests of their client. The advice is shut up, say nothing, because if you say nothing, it can't be used against you in court. And they're only thinking about the one courtroom, but there's a whole other courtroom. There's the members of the public, there's the regulators, there's the concerned parents, there's taxpayers, regulators, you go on and on and on. There's a lot of other courtrooms out there. And if you're not factoring in those other courtrooms, frankly, your lawyer is giving you bad advice. I could give you a story, and we'll save it for the episode, about a guy who listened to his lawyer and lost his entire career because of it. Ended up, perhaps not getting originally convicted of the charges he was facing, but at what cost? Absolutely horrible strategy. We'll talk about that one
Yeah,
later.
and I think that's important to know what forum you're in when you're taking the advice of your lawyer. Also important for your lawyers to know them as you go. I like the title of the next episode that we've got planned of "Let Go Your Ego" and "Let Go Your Ego" in this case. How to get yourself into trouble, and oh my God, that is self-inflicted a lot of the time. Jeff, tell us more about how you counsel CEOs, other leaders, to put their ego out of the equation.
It's tricky. And it's funny. I have been the guy who has sat down at the board table. I have been the guy, being called to have a private meeting out on the golf course. And it's everything from insider trading allegations to you run the gamut. I'm not going to give away all of the different scenarios that I've been advising clients with. But inevitably, the question becomes, why don't you just do X? Why don't you say this? Why don't you do this? And the answer you get back is, because I don't want to. And I'm like, okay, I get that. But why don't you want to? And you just take a look at the really public, really bad CEO case studies. Whether it's, Travis Kalanick, back in the early Uber days. You can go on and on. Up this side of the border, you could argue that the complete downfall of BlackBerry. Remember when everyone in the world had a BlackBerry and they completely
Mostly.
destroyed them? So Balsillie and Lazaridis. You can go on and on and on CEOs who made really bad decisions, and why are they making those decisions, and why didn't they reconsider? And so we'll take a look at that, and what the most common factor is in how to get yourself out of trouble in the first place.
And some of it's arrogance, and some of it's an avoidance of discomfort, right? The idea that I
Oh,
don't want to do that.
100%. So life is full of awkward moments, and I get that. Sometimes you got to embrace those awkward moments and do the right thing anyway. And that's a tricky thing for people to kind of wrap their noodle around.
For leaders in our space, Kara Lawson, the Duke basketball coach, has a great phrase called "do harder, better," because it's not going to get easier. You got to get better doing the hard stuff. I think for a lot of people, particularly reporting to the public, in matters of integrity is manage discomfort better. Do the uncomfortable with greater comfort and greater grace, and you'll go a lot farther. So I love that one. Do you want to cue up the next one?
Oh, the next one scares me. So here's we're just going to go ahead and call it saying the quiet part out loud. And that is, and frankly, I'll tell you straight up, the reason it scares me is because it doesn't matter what side of the issue you're on, you have really adamant opinions about it. And we're going to take a look at the issue of transgender athletes. Is it fair? Is it not fair? If it's not fair, who is it not fair to? And what on earth can they do on either side of the debate? We're going to try to thread the needle on this, but it's a big issue, and it's going to require leadership. And talk about awkward subjects that don't lend themselves to being comfortable. But this is what we're facing these days.
It's an issue, and leaders are going to find this in a lot of contexts. It's an issue that's being demagogued a bit across the board. People are taking sides on it without a lot of insight. It riles people up. It causes a lot of concern, and it has people who would normally be conveniently on one side or the other at cross purposes with each other in various circumstances. So it's a fascinating topic. I think it actually is a metaphor. I think the reason we want to do this is, what do you do in the intractable circumstance, the one that you're going to probably be disliked for by somebody for something? It really becomes a great case study, one that's an evolving one too, because there's so much we don't know. There's so much that isn't necessarily true. And ultimately, it's being used at times to exploit emotion and to drive perception rather than reality. So I think it's a great conversation to have. Yeah, I'm nervous about it too. And Jeff and I probably don't see eye to eye on this one. Now, Jeff and I don't have to see eye to eye on anything as part of this show, which makes it kind of interesting. We work together, we like each other, and we benefit from each other's perspective. So at times, I think that's the benefit that we offer our audience. And hopefully we'll offer that with our guests, people that don't always necessarily have the same perspective as we do. But ultimately, that goes. Jeff, the changing role of venues. Why don't you venues talk about that?
I've done work with Major League Baseball, NHL Arena, NBA Arena, NFL stadiums, and National Rugby League stadiums. You know, I think the last I checked, it was over 18 professional sports teams call some of the venues I've worked with home. And it's fascinating how not just the business of venues, but the communications around the venue. When LeBron scores 40, you know, the Lakers make the news, but no one talks about the fact that he did it at the Crypto.com arena, other than, you know, as a passing reference. But heaven forbid if LeBron twists his ankle on a piece of misaligned flooring, or some kid slips and falls and cracks her head open, or you can go on and on and on. We saw this with the Texas Rangers and the fan who fell. That was probably the better part of a decade ago. But venues, I think they're the cultural heart, and the beating pulse of a community, but they only make the news if it's bad news.
Yeah, they rarely get good news. And maybe it's because, as a guy who wrote a chapter in a finance book about stadium development, and has worked on a number of feasibility studies, the people who build them lie to the public a lot about them. They lie about how much they're going to cost. They overpromise what they're going to deliver. And this is coming from a guy who's in favor of them by and large, having me say that. So,
yep.
So the idea that there are opportunities to remake your cityscape, your town through venues, but there are a lot of ways that you can fail either in the campaign to get one, have one be really badly tainted over problems associated with it, and really destroy the reputation that you're looking for from it. So ultimately, I think we'll explore those topics, and it's one that really is close to Jeff, but also close to my work too. So a fascinating one as we go.
We're going to take a look at coaching, just coaching in general. It used to be coaching, you hired a coach to make your team win. And that's not the case anymore. Coaching, my heart goes out to coaches. Coaching harassment, allegations of sexism, allegations of favoritism. You know, the coaches who use tough love on particular athletes are getting just absolutely villainized these days. And how much of that is legitimate? How much of that is good and it's long overdue? How much of that is we're just a bunch of snowflakes and we need to suck it up, princess? So we're going to take a look at that and come up with some helpful tips if you're the poor schmuck who's facing the receiving end of both barrels.
Coaches are they're my clients. They're the people I like and care about. I think they're the most dedicated people out there. And I'd say to that sometimes they bring it on themselves too.
Yeah.
So there is an aspect of awareness, understanding, and to some degree, some of those ideas about letting go of your ego and not making the hole deeper, every coach could benefit from. So we really, really, really want to get to help coaches. I've been in the role where I've unfortunately had to recommend firing coaches, but ultimately I've always wanted them to succeed, and I want them to succeed in a good way and know the pitfalls, know where the rocks are and where the sharks are and what's waiting for them. So that's an important one for us. And I think given all the work we do around safe sport, around athletic integrity, and the ultimate ideas, those are places where those conversations can get rich and deep and can help coaches avoid some of those problems.
We have a bunch of other ideas. Frankly, we're going to look for your help. We're going to look for your input. If you're here, pass along a note, post a comment. Hey, I want to talk about this. I want to talk about this. We've got some other ideas. We'll put some thoughts together. There's a bunch of stuff out there. We're going to look at what transparency means in 2025, what it is, what it isn't, how it works. We thought about what was the one subject we were looking at, how to get fired and never hired again. There's probably a bunch of different case studies we could throw out on that one. We'll bring out some guests if we can find them. If you have a good idea for a guest, we want to hear about it. If you think we're absolutely wrong, you can keep it to yourself, although there's nothing preventing you from posting comments, although we do reserve the right to make fun of you.
Definitely.
Look, we're just like Bob said, we're just two middle-aged white guys who love sports and happen to be really good at leadership in a crisis. And we thought, look, let's come up with some helpful tips and advice and throw some comments and some stuff out there. My big parting thoughts, sit down, buckle up. We're going to have some fun with it. And my big thing is, look, doesn't matter what happened. The bad thing has happened. It's not that the bad thing happened. It's how you respond to the bad thing that ultimately determines trust, credibility, and whether or not you're a leader.
Absolutely. Jeff, thanks for agreeing to this. It'll make our conversations more fun, more public, worth sharing, hopefully, kind of shedding light on the topics that we have. Over the summer months, as we get through this, we'll hopefully help people when they're in that crisis come get help and ultimately understand what they need to do to avoid making things worse. I always have sort of loved this quote: "When you find yourself in a hole, stop digging and seek help." And here's the other nice part: to some degree, the fact that you're under fire, the fact that there are questions about the leadership you've shown, doesn't make your leadership perfect, but it does prove that you're in the game and out there working on it. So there are ways to handle it and ways not to handle it, and we're going to explore all of those this summer. We're going to probably have a laugh or two. We may explore some culturally significant things. We may offend a few people. We're going to try not to do that too much, which is remarkable because I'm the American and Jeff's the Canadian, and he might be the less polite one, but we're going to have some fun with that. And we're going to enrich your conversations, we hope. I hope we're provoking, hope we're smart, hope we're funny, and hope we can give you a tidbit of a lesson every now and then along the way. We're really excited to be doing this with Culture and Sports. They're a great venue for this. We're really happy with what they're able to do because ultimately sports is all about culture, and it can, and the only way sports survives and gets better is when the culture's right.
Thanks so much. See you soon, folks.
You've been listening to Leaders Under Fire in Sports by Culture in Sports. These moments under pressure don't just shape headlines, they shape people. They shape organizations and the cultures they leave behind. Thanks for joining me. I'm Jeff Chatterton, joined with Bob Boland and Dr. Jeremy Piasecki, and our special guests as we've examined what leadership looks like when it truly matters. If this conversation challenged the way you think about leadership in sports, we invite you to continue to learn with us at cultureinsports.com, because influencing positive change starts with how leaders respond when they're under fire.